Now we can start. Good morning, everyone. May I start with asking for approval of the agenda, please? A motion to approve? Any seconds? A second for the agenda? Perhaps Virginia could second. Thank you. All in favor? Any opposed? Thank you. May I ask for approval of the minutes? A motion, please. Second? Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none. Good morning. We have two items today. The first is a presentation of the safety management system policy. You may remember the FTA briefed us on this program, and the first important step, or one of the first important steps, is the board's accepting of such a policy. So that we'll hear today. The second item is Christian Kent, Assistant General Manager for Access Services, will brief the committee on an innovative approach to help prevent customer injuries, which occur when riders board in a light metro access vehicles. These comprise the majority of metro access customer injuries. Before we start on the formal agenda, I'd like to ask Mr. Lavin to give us an update on some roadway worker safety protection incidents. You may recall the last time the committee met, we had just heard from the FTA about some concerns they had over roadway worker safety protection. They asked WMATA to develop a program to respond and to do some training. WMATA did that very promptly. The response was, I believe, acceptable to the FTA. They were getting ready to write back and say they had accepted when May 18th occurred. There was an incident that day and another one yesterday. Both of these occurred after the training and after the briefings that had been done. Mr. Lavin, I know you're still investigating, so this is preliminary, but if you could just give us a briefing on the two incidents, tell us where you are.
Okay, so there was two operational incidents. One of them we classified as a near miss, and the other one was an overspeed incident, which we classified as an operational violation. So I'll give you the details of both events. So on May 17th in the area of Eisenhower, we had two WMATA employees who were level 4 RICs and a contractor who was an AT&T employee. The level 4 RIC put the contractor on the track under revenue service, which is a violation of our SOP procedure. We do allow contractors on an active right-of-way. Typically, those are personnel with track experience or ATC experience. This individual happened to be an AT&T employee, should not have been placed out there at all. So when we did the preliminary investigation, we interviewed the two WMATA employees. Both of them, their certifications for RWP 4, level 4, were current. In addition, both of them had attended the AMF training. These individuals, and I'm not going to say too much because it is an active investigation and there is an administrative action that is going to be taken. So in this case, the person who was acting as a RIC violated the SOP by putting the contractor on the track. He failed to perform an adequate pre-job meeting. He failed to institute the AMF procedure by placing an individual at the station in advance of their location. And he went under the tracks under train approach warning, which is no longer an acceptable form of roadway worker protection. So in this case, these three individuals called the ROC. They requested track access under TAW. They omitted the statement with an AMF, which would invoke having an advanced flagger. The ROC controller did not pick up on this omission. She has since been suspended for 10 days for not recognizing that the appropriate level of RWP was in place. And the three individuals entered the track. They were walked approximately anywhere between 35 and 100 feet when they heard a train approaching. They reversed their direction of travel, and they were walking back towards an opening in the handrail where they were going to step into the clear. The train operator came around a curve. She observed them. She observed one of the individuals stepping off, which she categorized as jumping out of the way of the train. We don't believe that any of them were actually violating the dynamic envelope of the train, and they were all at the catwalk at the time. We've since pulled them all down for the investigation and interviews, as well as post-incident testing. That investigation is continuing, and there will be administrative action for the WMATA employees. All right, with the incident that occurred yesterday, you had three WMATA employees, and you had a contractor who was performing track inspections, which is permitted in that context for that track inspector to be on an active right-of-way. In this incident, you had the advanced mobile flagger positioned at the station in advance of their location. That AMF was giving instructions to trains through the area. You had several trains pass through the area without incident. For the particular train that was involved, you had a train operator who had been off on medical for approximately 11 months, had just returned to work. Last week, they were in training for the entire week. This week, this was approximately their third day operating in revenue service. They had what is called an LPI with them who was supposed to coach them. We're looking at the training for the LPIs as well to see if it's adequate. In this incident, the roadway workers who were out on the tracks identified a track condition, and they contacted Central requesting a 10-mile-an-hour speed restriction, at which time they were told after they were granted file time that's created congestion, they were asked if they could stand in the clear. They had moved to a place of safety. They then allowed several trains through the area without incident. This was, I believe, the third train, which I have to confirm. It came through. The train operator stated he blew his horn. He waved to them. They waved back, gave him a proceed, at which time he proceeded past them at approximately 25 miles an hour, which is an operational violation. So those are the two incidents. And I just want to put this in context. A year ago, the acceptable operating speed to go past employees on the tracks was 35 miles an hour. We're trying to get them down to 10. So that's the goal that we're trying to work. I know these are negative outcomes for the Roadway Worker Protection Program, but I think it's good that we're getting reporting back from the field of these events so we can investigate them and try to eradicate them. I'll take any questions if anyone has questions.
Just clarity, had all of the people involved in these incidents been through the training the week before?
Yes, they had all been through the training.
And one more question, and then there may be others. In the response that WMATA made to the FTA a couple of weeks ago, there was a mention of increasing the number of supervisors in the ROCC from 2 to 5, I think. Is that underway, or have we made any progress?
Yes, it is. We sent them a response on April 28th. We met with them after that. I think it was around May 7th or 8th. We gave them an amended response, which I can provide, which we detail further actions that we're taking at the ROC to include the addition of supervisors, both on the rail operations side and on the maintenance way side of the house.
Thank you, Mr. Lavin. Are there other questions from the Safety Committee? All right. Thank you. Seeing none, let's proceed with the program then on the Safety Management System presentation.
Okay, so the first item on the agenda is the SMS policy statement. So if you'll recall, several months ago, we had the FTA come in and they gave a presentation to the board on the SMS program or the safety management system, which they're looking for us to adopt. At that time, I said I would prepare a policy statement for resolution to the board. So the approach that we took is we prepared the board resolution statement, which is stating as an organization and through the support of the board, WMATA will be adopting the SMS approach to safety. So what we're looking for is the board to review that resolution. If you concur, then there's a policy statement that gets signed by the general manager detailing the actions we'll take to move towards the SMS approach to safety. And once he signs it, that document will be included into our system safety program plan. So I believe those documents were furnished to the board in the bias or the meet.
Is the idea that the committee approve this and then it goes to the board later? Is that the procedure here?
I believe that is the procedure.
So you're looking for acceptance by the safety committee today?
Right, and then it would go to the board to vote
gotcha.
For resolution, and then if it's approved, okay. The GM would sign the document.
All right. Is there a presentation, or is this just what
no,
we
No, it's
have?
Just okay. the what was
well,
provided.
I've read it. Are there any questions from others? Anyone issues, questions, comments?
Mr. Levin. Mr. Levin, I guess the first question is, how was this WMATA policy statement, draft policy statement developed? What was the internal workings that produced this document?
So what we did is we partnered with the FTA, and they have pretty much a template that's for the industry. So we used that template as guidance, and that's how we developed the policy statement. Since that time, we've taken what we've written, sent it to the experts at the FTA, and they concurred with our approach, and they also were they congratulated us on being proactive in this manner.
So the FTA has sort of conditionally approved this?
Yes, sir.
And you said that there was a template. Are there any areas in the template that the WMATA draft deviates from or did something different?
It's probably more language than content or intent. So we pretty much stuck to the template.
So this is basically the standard of what the government is looking for?
Yes, sir.
Is there an industry best practices template, or is the only template that exists, one that was developed by the FTA?
I'm not aware of any after SMS template. The SMS program is generally under the umbrella of the FTA.
And when the board takes action, after this committee takes action to approve it, is there then a formal submission to the FTA?
We would submit it as part of our system safety program plan, which, by the way, they just approved, and then this would be an addendum to it.
And do they approve the addendum when it's submitted? Is that the process?
I believe they would approve it, yes.
Thank you. That's it.
Other questions? Seeing none, then thank you. Let's move to Mr. Kent, who has a very interesting presentation for us this morning.
Thank you very much, and good morning.
Mr. Kent, I'm sorry. I'm remiss today. We need to vote on the last item. I'm too interested in moving forward. Could we ask for a vote, please, on the Safety Management System Program? I'd like to hear all the ayes. I'm sorry? A motion? I'm falling apart today. Thank you. So moved, without objection. All right. Those in favor?
Stand for the lack of vote. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. I think we've squeaked through this.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Well, thankfully, this is an information item pertaining to Metro Access employee passenger assistance safety training. And I have two guests with me this morning. Christy Moore and Tom Hilgen are here from Willis Towers Watson. They are a consulting firm that's been doing some work with our risk and safety groups here at Metro. Christy is an occupational therapist, and her expertise in particular has been very useful to Metro Access in taking a look at the way that injuries occur on our paratransit service and how we can reduce them. So in the interest of time, Terry, I'm going to ask you just to go to this third slide, the bar chart, if you could. The statistics on Metro Access injuries are actually pretty good. The goal is to stay below 2.0 preventable accidents per 100,000 miles. And you can see from this chart, from January 2016 to the present, we've only exceeded that number once. And I thought it was important to share this just for context. But what I'm really proud of, though, is that we're not hiding behind the statistics. We're not settling for any level of injuries that occur that are greater than zero. And that's why we wanted to take a second look at this. I know that this committee and the board receive quarterly reports on our safety performance, and occasionally that this will jump out because, you know, just from proportion, we do 2 million passenger trips per year. So, you know, the number of injuries that we have really stand out statistically. So we wanted to take a closer look and see what we could do to reduce injuries. So on the next page, on challenges, this is really what led us down the path about why we pursued this. There have been some periodic fluctuations in the injury count, and they're not typically the ones that we feel are more controllable are the ones that occur during the boarding and alighting process when our paratransit customers have not yet begun their journey. And I will say that we have an oddly disproportionate number of non-preventable accidents where people strike our vehicles from the rear while we're attempting to park, load, and travel in a lot of tight places in the community. And I know everyone sees our vehicles all over the place. It's one of the reasons why we've chosen the van configuration that we do, because the vehicle needs to maneuver in a lot of tighter places that the bus system doesn't have to go. When we started looking at our injury experience, we were trying to see if there were any obvious trends, any causal factors that would suggest why we were having injuries during boarding and alighting. And what we found was the training curricula that we've been using is pretty consistent with paratransit industry best practice. There was no discernible pattern in how long the operators had been working in the program, you know, or really any other trends that would say, okay, you know, we're doing something wrong, it's a policy issue or some practice that we needed to correct. So what we did is we said, okay, let's look for an out-of-the-box solution. And the out-of-the-box solution is to go to a variety of expertise that's outside the transit industry. And that's where we turned to the occupational therapist. Actually, this was a suggestion of our chief safety officer, which I thank him very much for that, because this is really bearing some fruit. And, you know, the idea was that even though Metro Access is not a medical transportation service, that doesn't necessarily mean that the medical industry might not have some techniques that we could apply to the way we deploy this service that would help reduce injuries. And so for that reason, that's how we started working with Willis Towers Watson. So I think that's a great place for me to turn the presentation over to them and ask them if they could share some of their preliminary findings with you.
Good morning, everyone. So first, I just want to let everyone know what, like, occupational therapist is, because a lot of people don't really know what it is. So kind of a global, you know, the biggest picture would be that we help people across the lifespan participate in things that they want and need to do through engaging in occupations. And occupations is defined as anything that occupies your time in the day. So it's not a job, which is what most people think that our job is. So it's anything, bathing, dressing, ambulating, going in and out of your house, anything that you do within your day. So that's what an occupational therapy is, just so everybody understands the difference. And then we did a concentration of root cause analysis of the injuries to see exactly where everything was happening, so we knew where to really focus and that kind of stuff. And then we also evaluated the manner of the operators. So we looked a dive over the material. We went and did some in-room observation of the training, and then we also did some on-the-road observations.
All right, from the process that we undertook, it was pretty comprehensive. So we attended training classes by contractors. We reviewed all the training written documentation. We reviewed all the policies and procedures. We looked at the training video, and we performed ride-alongs, right, where the rubber hits the road, right? Was everything in compliance? Does everything make sense from an OT perspective? And the other piece is the ergonomics perspective that we brought in as well, since we're certified ergonomists at the same time, and that's how human people work, how to best position themselves to avoid injury to themselves, right? If the contractor is getting injured while moving in helping or assisting a customer, other injuries can occur as well. So next slide. So as, you know, we have to make data-driven decisions, so we dissected all the injury data. We only looked at the customer injury data, and we broke every incident by process step, whether it's boarding, alighting, the vehicle in motion, or the door-to-door service. So those are four unique steps in the entire process of customer engagement, as well as the agent. And when we're talking about the agent, is it the wheelchair lift? Is it the securement equipment failing or not securing properly? Stairs, is there a mobility aid involved? And the road surface. And we're getting all that information from the incident descriptions. And ultimately, we factored in the provider operator performance, incident location, and the time of day. So we did a deep dive on all the data.
And some of our recommendations to begin to implement is when we were doing the training and sitting through the classroom, they did a commentary door-to-door, and so it was a really great training, but it focused more on someone with a visual impairment, is when you're walking next to them saying, there's a, you know, watch out, watch your step here, step to your right, step to your left. And that's something that we recommend that they do for pretty much anybody who ambulates. When you're walking next to someone just to say, oh, watch your step here, someone who doesn't have a visual impairment, it's still just best practice, you know, to do it for everybody, for everyone's safety involved. Because, I mean, if you're walking with a family member, you kind of tend to do that automatically, like, oh, watch your step here, there's a step. So we recommended doing commentary door-to-door with every ambulatory, which is a walking customer. The other thing, a simple one to do is for, once again, for anyone who's ambulatory, is to offer your arm or using the posy belt. The posy belt they mostly use is with wheelchair customers for putting it on them to keep them in their wheelchair when they're in the van. We recommended offering that for ambulatory customers, and the reason for that is as a therapist, we call them gait belts, but it's a posy belt. And when we're ambulating with a customer, what you want to do is it gives you something to hold on to. So if you're walking next to somebody and they start to lose their balance, it kind of gives you something that you're holding on to so that you can, you know, redirect their center of gravity. Because your center of gravity, you can control someone's trunk. If you can control their trunk, you can prevent a fall from happening. And it also is nice because when you have the posi belt to hold on to, you're not grabbing on their article of clothing. You're not going to rip something of theirs. And if they do start to fall and you want to stop them, you don't want to grab an arm. So this also prevents you from injuring an arm. So it's just kind of nice because it's just an easier way to correct someone's if they start to lose their balance. The other thing is to, when you're walking with somebody, is to assist by walking on their weaker side and not their stronger side. And then we could help operators identify which is someone's strong side and which is someone's weak side. Because when you are walking with someone's best to walk on their weak side, if they do tend to lose their balance, you can help them correct it and prevent a fall altogether. And then the last thing is we wanted to focus training on to implement rather on an impairment and not necessarily a medical diagnosis. When we are looking over the training material, it talks specifically about certain medical diagnoses. And I recommend that it more focus on a mobility impairment, vision impairment, cognitive impairment, some type of impairment and not necessarily a diagnosis because operator's not going to know what someone's medical history is. And then moving forward, some of our next steps would also to be evaluating the boarding process with the wheelchair lift. A lot of incidents that happened with passengers was involving the wheelchair lift. So that would be a next step for us to want to like kind of go a deeper dive into looking at the wheelchair lift. Another one is to improve the dispatch function related to multiple boardings. One thing we noticed is when they'd have to get one person off the van to get another person on. So it was a lot of like constantly maneuvering. It was, you know, playing like a game of, you know, chess or something. You have to move someone here to move someone here. It was kind of a little hard for operators. And then the last thing would be development training in conflict resolution.
So undoubtedly you may have some questions about this. I know we threw a little bit of terminology out here this morning, but I want to kind of thank our guests for going over the technical parts of this. Bottom line is this. Metro Access does train the operators on providing door-to-door service. The issue that we found, I think, from listening to this analysis is that it is more of a transit-style training where it's basically saying, okay, you are, and it has its origins in taking people who typically were bus operators and teaching them the differences between bus and paratransit, saying you know how to operate the vehicle, but do you recognize that when you're on paratransit that every single one of your customers are going to be disabled, and do you have some familiarity with, you know, some of the behaviors, some of the limitations that your customers will have because of all the various disabilities that exist? We do train in this. We train in helping the operator to recognize how to interact with the customer, you know, probably from more of a, you know, a social standpoint or a behavioral standpoint. But when it comes to the technical training, I mean, we have the wheelchair lifts, we have the safety belts, we have a way to secure people who are riding on our vans, who are using wheelchairs. But this process is more nuanced than that. So a person is blind. Well, obviously, they're going to need escorting to and from the vehicle. The catch is the fact that there are customers that have multiple disabilities. So if the driver is told, this customer that you're going to be transporting is blind, and that's their medical diagnosis, and they don't approach the customer and say, but, you know, they may also have some type of a mobility issue as well. It's the physical part of their ability to move from the door to the vehicle that the operator needs to pay attention to if we really want to make any significant progress in reducing injuries. So part of the enhancements that we plan to make, and we plan to implement all the recommendations that we received, we plan to continue to work with the consultant on more aspects of the way we deliver this service. But the training is going to be much more nuanced to say, okay, you know, when you offer assistance in door-to-door, do you know all of the different kinds of things you should be telling that customer as you're making the journey from the door to the vehicle and back? And many other issues, like as Christy said, if you can identify where you think the person is particularly frail, are you standing where you need to be, where they're most likely to stumble or fall? There are a lot of these pieces that can get lost in the training, but, you know, especially if the operator has had some tenure with us. and may not have remembered all of these little details, so we see a tremendous potential in changing the paradigm of paratransit training using these techniques. So I'd be happy to take any questions you have.
Thank you very much for a most interesting presentation. Sure. And I think you're right. A lot of this is nuance, but those changes can make a difference, I think. You'll be implementing these by the end of 2017, as
yes,
I understand.
Ma'am.
So it'll be interesting to see if the injury figures next year bear out improvement. I feel confident they will. And I want to recognize Mr. Lavin, too, for having the good sense to go in this direction. I think it's an excellent idea. Are there other questions from committee members? Ms. Porter. I'm sorry. Well, I'll recognize you anyway, Ms. Porter. Go ahead. You've been interested in this, I know.
I want to commend you for taking this issue very seriously. It did come up and when we were talking at a previous time about the injury rate with Metro Access, and I think that the way that you've approached it has been very innovative. I like that you've gotten people with different kinds of backgrounds and different kinds of skills in there, and that you've handled the issue of what to do in a very analytical way and went through all the possibilities and pulled out those that were more likely. I think that's a very good way to approach it. Are you planning to include some kind of follow-up where you look, as Ms. Carmody said, where once it's implemented, follow up and look and see how injury rates have changed and the remaining injuries that happen, how they happened, and whether that can provide some feedback for future training?
Absolutely. You know, I don't like to introduce new initiatives without metrics. We want to define success. We want you to see very obviously in the reports that come to you that we are making improvements in our safety records. So absolutely, that's going to be part of it. I also neglected to mention that the AAC is going to play a very active role in this, especially as we start to get into some of the policy issues, things like the way that the wheelchair is used or, you know, Christy mentioned the idea of offering a posy belt. You know, there's some customers, and I'm sure that, you know, many of you work with the community all the time, and you know that there are some customers that are going to say, I really don't need all this extra help. I'm fine by myself. So that's why the conflict resolution part is really important, because we're not forcing things on people. We're just simply saying to them, when you ride our service, if you will allow us to secure you this way or offer you this belt or board you on the vehicle in a certain fashion, that this is for your safety and it will greatly reduce the likelihood of an injury. But it's still, in many cases, the customer may opt not to do some of the things that we're talking about. But I will say it's been my experience, and I just had an anniversary this past week. This is my 30th year doing paratransit. So, you know, in all the time that I've been doing this, you know, I have to say that it's nice to be able to tell you that there's something new under the sun. You know, this is a new approach that we're using here, and I think that organizations that talk about safety with their employees and with their customers, coincidentally or not coincidentally, usually have better safety records. So I think even the dialogue with the customer about these potential safety hazards, that in itself can have an impact, you know, whether they actually opt to use every feature that we offer them or not. But we will come back to you with more information on how it's working through the year.
Thank you. Mr. Corcoran, have a question.
Thank you. And congratulations, Patrick and Christian, for looking into this. Question, I think it was slide 3 that had the bar charts on it, and it seemed to be with an exception or two on a month. Typically running at that 1.5 injuries per 100,000 miles traveled. As our performance is much better than our standards, would we look to improve our standards, not improve them, raise the bar or reduce the number of injuries, number one. And number two, how do these numbers compare to other systems nationwide?
Well, do you want to answer that?
In the presentation, I believe it was last month, we did the comparison of us compared to other properties. I think we were performing like number 4 out of 5. So we weren't performing that great when stacked up against competition. I think what we need to do when we start setting the bar for the targets of how we improve is look at it from two perspectives. One is collision-related and non-collision-related, and then break those two out, because that's the real way you gauge whether or not this program is truly effective.
Okay.
So, and we could always revisit, you know, where we're going to benchmark those two different areas.
So those numbers are not currently available, Pat?
I believe it was in a previous presentation. When you're saying the numbers...
The collision versus non-collision ones?
I'm sure they're available. I don't think we haven't broken out that way in the chart. But those numbers are available.
Okay.
And we can get you those. And I think that's probably the better way to benchmark this program going forward, because what you're seeing is both.
Okay.
But I'll get you that information.
Thank you.
Could you send that to all of us when you get it?
I will.
Thank you. Mr. Smedberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Moore, you mentioned development of training and conflict resolution. Was that identified as an issue or a problem or just something that needs to be enhanced? And what causes the conflict?
So it could be a few different things. So when you're, you know, engaging the new, like the posy belt, so if someone is disagreeing to that, you could explain to them more. It's for your safety if you go to lose your balance. So some of that stuff. And there is people, customers that have some behavioral issues because you do have people who have some mental disabilities. So learning how to de-escalate a situation is also probably a key thing in the training. They do go over it. But like, you know, we could, to me, it's mostly just explaining to people too, especially with like the posy belt, or using different things about why it's important. Because in my profession, I had to do it all the time. Because people are like, I don't want to use it. I'm like, it's a safety thing. I said, if you go to fall, it gives me something to hold on to. And then also, when you are dealing with a lot of customers who have some behavioral issues, learning how to de-escalate a situation. Working with psychiatric disabilities, it's a challenge. Yes. And it's a really hard challenge. So
yeah, it's hard work. And Mr. Kent, what's the timeline for next steps?
Well, as we hope to complete the items that have been recommended so far by the end of this calendar year, you know, we're putting that as a target. We will probably finish sooner than that. You know, one of the things that's at issue is the fact that it takes time to get the training deployed to 600 or 700 operators. It's a lot of folks that have to get it. But, you know, we're adopting the material, the changes to the curriculum very quickly, and we'll have this done by the end of the calendar year. But our work with the consultants is continuing. So, I mean, we'll have even more to share with you next year.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Goldman.
Thank you, Christian. I'm always learning more when I have a presentation from Christian Kent on paratransit activities. A couple of quick questions. I assume the definition of industry that you're using is the same definition of injury we use for other customer industry as well as the industry of employees. I realize having said that, your answer is yes. I realize having said that, I don't know what that means. So is an injury something that is self-reported in the mind of the customer, or is an injury something that results in someone going to a hospital? What exactly is an injury in the context of these data that you're using?
You know, that's a great question. It's the NTD definition. Since we report the injuries and collisions to the FDA, we follow their definition. And, you know, there's certain criteria, like if a passenger is transported to a medical facility from the scene of a collision or any kind of incident on our vehicle, that triggers the definition right there. So, I mean, we can say that it's comparable to the measures that other agencies are using because we're all using the FTA definition.
Well, so if someone falls down in the way into hospital, who reports that? Is that the operator of the Metro Access van that says, my customer fell?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that's
right.
Considered an injury.
That's
at that
right.
Point, even though he may have walked in an ambulatory fashion and nothing was wrong with him.
That's right. Even once they get to the medical facility, even if they're examined and the doctor says the person is going to be fine and doesn't need any treatment, we're still going to log that as an injury because the medical trip was still triggered by the event.
Now, shifting to the program, the program that you're describing that you want to implement, since these Metro Access operators don't work for WMATA per se, do we have a separate training program for them? Or is the training conducted by the contract operators?
That's right. The contractor provides the training. Metro compliance staff on my department approves the curriculum, and we also have staff that go and observe the instruction in progress to make sure that it's consistent. We review the curriculum each year just to make sure that it's still current on any changes that have occurred in the environment that we operate in or Metro access policy or anything that any lessons learned over the years. So, I mean, we manage it through the contract.
Okay. And so as of today, you've not amended the contracts to require them to use this new training module that you're presenting today?
Well, the good news is we don't have to amend the document. The contract already says that they will train subject to Metro direction. So all we have to do is meet with them, go over the material, and they will incorporate the new material into their existing program.
And that's now been done?
That's being done presently.
Right. And that's being done for new hires. Is there also
and a refresher?
That's what I was going to
say. Yes, sir. All operators.
Component?
Yes, sir.
And what is the refresher component? Every 6 months, every year? What's the
it's annual.
Annual.
It's annual, although the Metro Access operators attend monthly safety meetings where they also get as much as an hour of refresher material that you know, is the discretion of our team and the contract management.
I think you just mentioned that there's about 600 or 700 operators all total. And I know, at least you've reported in the past, that there's a fairly high turnover rate. So how many, I'm trying to get a sense of within a 12-month period, how many new hires would you expect this new training module to
how many people will we expose this to over the course of the year?
How long will it take us to get 600 or 700 operators all up to speed?
That's why we are projecting the end of the calendar year. We believe we can get to everyone during that time frame. One of the things I will share about turnover, because I know this comes up from time to time, it's true that there's turnover in the paratransit operator ranks and also in call center style work environments in general. But usually that turnover reduces as the contract matures. Recently there has been a renewed effort on the part of the contractors to, which we've supported, to make the job more competitive so that we can get people that will not only take the job but stay, because obviously the longer that they serve as a paratransit operator, the more proficient that they become. Customers often get favorite drivers, and we like that. So we want to continue to reinforce that.
So what is the turnover right now about?
I would have to get that for you. I don't know it off.
I'm trying to just get to is at mm-hmm. what point is it within a year that we would expect the whole force of operators, 600 or 700, to be exposed to this training?
Absolutely.
Module, either as
yes.
New hires or as recurrent?
Yes, all of them. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Good luck. Good
sure,
job.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Kent, Ms. Moore, and Mr. Hilton.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us this morning. Is there any other business before the committee? Then we're adjourned.